SBS Radio.
Prime Minister, thanks so much for joining SBS World News.
Thanks, Anna. Good to be here.
For the people sitting at home on their couches, all these high-level diplomatic talks and discussions, what do they actually mean for someone at home watching this right now?
Keeping them safe and secure. It's that straightforward. We live in a part of the world that is changing dramatically. It is the focus of world attention, what's happening, what we call the Indo-Pacific, that arc that goes all the way up from Korea down through Japan, of course, taking in China, Indonesia, the Pacific Islands, Australia, right round through to India. And this is a part of the world that is just changing how everything is happening all right around the world. And its future is going to determine all of our futures. And so making sure that Australia and Australians can live safe and secure in a rapidly changing environment is incredibly important. It's the most important responsibility a Prime Minister has.
What do you say to the critics out there who see this as overblown rhetoric to make people feel insecure, and then you create the political answer to that question, that you are the Prime Minister that keeps them secure? Are you making more of this than it really is right now?
I think it's a very cynical view. I mean, Australia has always, through Prime Ministers over generations, been right here in this city and many cities like it around the world, forming partnerships that keeps Australians safe. I mean, in particular, if you go back, it was John Curtin who looked towards the United States during the Second World War. This was followed up by the Menzies government that put in place ANZUS 70 years ago. And here we are today in a whole new chapter, bringing the United Kingdom into our defence partnership. I mean, these are the things that are necessary to keep Australians safe. They go well beyond politics, and that is a responsibility that governments have, and I think all parliamentarians have. But as a Prime Minister, there's none more important.
We don't have boots on the ground, but are we effectively in some kind of proxy war with China already?
No, of course not. A lot of what our new arrangement addresses is areas of scientific cooperation and technology. I mean, later today we'll be meeting with the Quad, a great initiative by President Biden to get the leaders of the Quad, which is India, Japan, Australia and the United States. And we're focused on a very positive agenda. See, to create peace and stability in our region and security in our region, it's just not about security cooperation. It's also about things like getting COVID vaccines to developing countries. It's about creating what we call clean energy supply chains to ensure that the developing countries of our region can get access to the new technologies that is going to drive the world economy over the next 30, 50 years. And Australia wants to be very much part of that. See, when you can encourage prosperity in your region, when you have stability that does that, then everyone's safer.
Everyone's hanging on the actual detail of your technology, not taxes approach. Mm. Did your meeting with Dr. Daniel Juergen create more fodder for thought for you? What is the technology that we're going to rely on to do our part in the globe?
Well, Dan Juergen is a highly respected academic here in the United States. He's advised many administrations on both sides of politics here in the United States. And he has a very simple proposition. And that is, if you look over world history, what are the big changes that actually drive geopolitics and the cost of energy? Well, it's technology. It's technology each and every time. And if we want to address climate change, then we need the scale of change that only technology can bring. See, where we're at now, it's not about if, it's about how. There's a lot of talk about what people want to do, but we need to take the conversation to how are we going to do it? Not just Australia, not just the United States or countries in Europe, big advanced economies that have access to the technology that can achieve this big change that needs to happen over the next 30 years, but in countries like India, in Vietnam, in Indonesia. And see, they want jobs, they want industries, they want prosperity like the advanced countries have had. And we need to ensure that they can achieve that with these new energy technologies, and to ensure that that's sustainable in the future. And the more successful they are, the more prosperous all of us are.
Okay, so what fossil fuel industries are you prepared to immediately wind down and switch to a technology approach to meet that agenda?
None of them, and we don't have to, because that change will take place over time. What's important, though, is we are working on the transition technologies and fuels and the ultimate technologies that will be there over the next 20, 30 years that can get us to net zero. I mean, this doesn't happen overnight. And the suggestion that it can, I don't think matches history. What you need to do is build the capability, the technology, the understanding. It's got to be at scale, the right cost. It's got to work all over the world. And that's what the partnership should be. We need better partnerships on technology, better partnerships on science, all of these things. Yesterday, we agreed, Prime Minister Modi and I, that we would enter into a similar partnership that we have already with Germany and Singapore and countries like that to ensure these new clean energy technologies have a good supply chain and can be rolled out and make the difference in the world that we want it to make. Technology is what's going to get us there. That's what is actually going to cause the change we all want.
And are you detecting a shift in the mood within the Nationals party room towards your way of thinking here? I'm hearing as few as four members of the Nationals are currently rostered on to the sort of Matt Canavan approach. Do you think that you now have the backing of the majority of the Nationals to go forward with this?
Well, it's not about my view. It's about what I think Australians are clearly looking for. And what they're looking for is not just the action to get us to dealing with climate change. I mean, we've been in Australian politics, been going through this issue for many years, and there have been many approaches.
But what we many political careers ruined as well.
But what my job is to bring my government together to focus on the plan that can achieve. And the thing about a plan is this. A plan says to Australians, whether they're up in the Hunter or down in Bell Bay or up in Gladstone or up in the Pilbara, it says, this is how we achieve net zero emissions in the future. This is what it means. Our view is that we can achieve that by keeping the costs low, keeping people in industries, ensuring we're using transition fuels that take us from one place to the next, and we take people on the journey. So plenty of people like to make commitments. A lot of people are making commitments, but not enough people are making plans. And we're making a plan, and that plan, I believe, will address the concerns that Australians have about such a big type of change. Change can be concerning. And I want to give them a plan that enables them to go, okay, that's what they're going to do. I can work with that. I can see my future in that. I can see the future of my town, my region in that. And that's the assurance that Prime Ministers, Deputy Prime Ministers, governments want to give. And that's the way through.
And will that happen before Glasgow? The plan, the unveiling of your plan?
Well, I'll be returning from here and be working through that with my colleagues. But I look, my approach is always just to keep working with people. Just keep working with people, stay focused on the goal, bring people together. I'd like to get there as soon as I can, ultimately as to what the ultimate plan will be. But in government, you've got to work with everyone in your government and take everybody in the one direction. You know, over the last 3 years, we've been able to achieve an incredible unity within our government. That's been a big change. And that is enabling us now to deal with these, I think, very challenging global issues and do things that are necessary, but we're going to do them together.
Can I take you to the French relationship? How important is it to you that the French ambassador is back in Canberra? Is that an important diplomatic goal for you to repair the relationship so that he does return?
Well, what's important to me is that we get back to a normal relationship with France and we get on with the work we were doing before, because the submarine contract was only one element of our relationship. France and Australia enjoy a unique perspective on the Pacific. We've been here a long time. France is literally in the Pacific. And France are a great partner in the Pacific. France are a great partner amongst liberal democracies. We share values, we share an outlook, and we want to be partners with France. Now, we have had a contract. It's a contract that we couldn't continue with. It's a contract that, had we done that, it would have been terribly against Australia's interests. And so, of course, I couldn't continue with that. And, of course, when you make a tough decision like that, it's not going to be welcomed by the other party to the contract. I understand that. But we're just going to have to persist through it, engage more, and I believe we'll get there, because ultimately we share the same principles, we share the same beliefs, and we share the same goals.
Sources close to the French government have accused you and your government of stealing military and intelligence secrets through this process, because you've been privy since 2016 to their military approach and their capability. What do you say to that?
Well, I think it's nonsense. I think it's nonsense. I mean, we were working in good faith, in a contract, working together, paying our bills too, by the way. And over the course of paying our bills in that contract and working, a lot of our people developed great skills. That's great for Australia.
You're going to get fresh bills from Naval Group in the coming weeks, I read today. So how big do you expect them to be?
Well, we'll work through those issues and we'll do that in accordance with our contract. We've been very clear in our understanding of what our obligations are here and what we're acting in accordance with those. But let me just be really clear. The suggestion that some seem to be making, that Australia should have gone ahead with a contract costing taxpayers in Australia tens of billions of dollars to build a boat that was not going to meet our needs, would have been negligent. So I had to make a tough decision, and I understood in doing that it was going to cause some upset and disappointment with our friend and partner France. But at the end of the day, I'm always going to put Australia's national interest first, and I know the French, our good friends, would do the same thing if it was in their national interest. And in at this level, we all understand that as leaders. We all understand that all nations will act in accordance with their national interests. And our job, whether here in Washington this week with the Quad coming together or the many other forums with ASEAN that we work with in particular, it's all about trying to align our thinking as much as possible. But there'll be times when we have a different view. And at those times, I can assure you, what's foremost in my mind is what's best for Australia and keeping Australians safe.
As we walk around the streets of Washington, people aren't wearing masks, people aren't using QR codes, people are out having dinner, sitting down in restaurants, which is an absolute revelation to many in lockdown. Why is Australia not in the same position?
Well, we're coming from different places. As you know, here in the United States, and particularly here in Washington, if you head down to where the memorials are, you'll see the white markers there.
Yeah, very moving.
It's very moving, and it's a reminder that in Australia, that didn't happen. In Australia, we've saved well over 30,000 lives. If we'd had the same fatality rate of COVID as whether it's here in the United States or across the OECD, more than 30,000 Australians would have perished. So here, the virus ravaged their society and their community. And so their path has been different to ours. For much of our country, there has been little COVID, particularly in what we call now the non-COVID states, as outside of New South Wales, the ACT and Victoria. And so we will go into living with the virus in a different way to here, but we need to. And at 80% we can, and we know we can, and it's important that we do that. And my message to Australians is, that is something the Commonwealth Government absolutely supports, and we don't believe it should be denied to them.
Do you sympathise with the people who feel like they're living in an authoritarian state, who don't feel that they have the freedoms that they expected under a democratic government in Australia right now?
Well, public health and viruses, they don't take any account of anybody's beliefs. They can just kill you. They can just cause you to be very, very sick. And that's why, as countries, what we've done, I was talking to Prime Minister Suga about this morning, is just ensured that our vaccination rates are where they are now. We're over 50%, double dose, 75%, a single dose. We're getting there by the middle of next month, perhaps even sooner. Everyone in Australia who wanted to have a vaccine, there will have been enough vaccines for them to have had one. So once you've done that, you know, Australians have voted with their arms to be able to open up and to get those vaccination rates that we clearly set out, and they should get what they voted for by getting that vaccination in their arm.
And if all this goes well, you return to Canberra, the vaccination drive is successful, isn't an election on the cards in the next few months?
No. Why would there be? I've never said there would be.
Things can change.
The election's next year. There's been nothing that has happened that would require an election like that this year. I mean, I've got work to do. We've been at work here this week, keeping Australians safe. What we've seen, we've been able to bring together here, has taken many, many months, almost 2 years in some respects, to bring together. The work of government requires you to put those hours in, and we've been putting them in, and we've been getting the results. Keeping Australia strong, keeping Australians safe, and bringing them together on important issues like climate change.
What were the intelligence agency representatives doing here in Washington this week from Australia?
Working with their colleagues and counterparts as part of our important partnerships.
Were they taking part in meetings that you were having with other political leaders?
Well, they were there when we were discussing security intelligence issues. That's fairly normal. They're the officials who look after those things.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Prime Minister. We appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Ta.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.